Say tomorrow doesn't come. Say the moon becomes an icy pit. Say the sweet gum tree is petrified. Say the sun's a foul black tire fire. Say the owl's eyes are pinpricks. Say the raccoon's a hot tar stain. Say the shirt's plastic ditch litter. Say the kitchen's a cow's corpse. Say we never get to see it. Bright future, stuck like a bum star, never coming close, never dazzling. Say we never meet her, never him. Say we spend our last moments staring at each other, hands knotted together, clutching the dog, watching the sky burn. Say it doesn't matter. Say that would be enough. Say you'd still want this, us, alive, right here, feeling lucky. And so I always want to bring it back to, like, what is it to hold scary, frightening, overwhelmingly terrifying thoughts within us, but then also have some seed of hopefulness, some seed of acceptance and surrender to that there can be beauty, and maybe there's even more beauty now as we see it shifting and changing and maybe slipping away from us.
We definitely know that all animals have language. They talk to each other. They understand each other. And they have interesting ways of communicating that only recently have we figured out, even in part, because rhinos use a breath language. Fish use luminescence. Squid can actually send different messages, one on one side of their body and one on the other side of their body, with color and light and patterns. So they can ward off an enemy on one side by looking very fierce, and on the other side, they can be greeting a friend. So we do know cows have facial expressions that are so subtle you can't really notice them, and that cats and horses use their ears and their tails and their whiskers and so on. But animals communicate with sounds too. And we know that elephants rumble and they purr and they almost growl, but they do it subsonically under the ground. And you need instrumentation to capture that sound. Humans can't really get the nuance of it. And it's not just sound. It's that a mile away, another herd of elephants hears that. And they don't just think, oh, there's a herd over there making a noise. They know that that means there are people with guns threatening our children. Or, we have found water. Come over here and enjoy it.
The living world is enormously enriching to human life. I think that was the first thing that I felt. I don't think I articulated it that way, but I just loved animals. I loved all the different things they did, all the different ways they looked, how you can never know enough about them. They're always just totally fascinating. I think that was the first thing that I learned. And the only place in the universe where we have detected living things is this planet. Are there living things elsewhere among the billions and billions and billions of stars? Quite possibly, but life is at least extremely rare, because everywhere people who've spent their careers looking for it, they have not found any. So we tend to take living for granted. I think that might be the biggest limitation of human intelligence, is to not understand with awe and reverence and love that we live in a miracle, that we are part of, and that we have the ability to either nurture or destroy.
It's such a wild world there. And there are so many different types of soil, of course, and all these different types of soil ecosystems, astonishingly diverse places, diverse in terms of the physical environment, and diverse in terms of the living organisms who have adapted to different corners and crevices of these physical environments. So it's really exciting to see us exploring more and more these details of life in the soil, which remains so mysterious. And it's just with the help of modern techniques like DNA sequencing and other such methods that we give ourselves access to these mysterious realms.
with coral reefs, it's just one animal, the coral, which is a foundation species. So you impact that and you impact so many other species. You know, you go to a coral reef and it's just teeming with life. You know, everything from turtles to small fish to all the crabs and crustaceans, and it's all dependent on that coral. So once that dies, the whole system shifts to a sort of an algae-dominated environment, and it finds it very, very difficult to recover. So it's so important that we protect these foundation species. We forget how important coral reefs are. We think they're a great place to go for a snorkel while we're on a summer holiday, but we don't think of their value. This is one of the most valuable ecosystems on the planet. Something like 25% of all marine life live on coral reefs, and they provide the coastal barriers that protect our shorelines and sort of break up that wave energy. So there's all these benefits, and they are a great place for finding sort of drugs for. It's anything from pain relief to cancer medications. You know, there are so many different species with such strange behaviors and adaptations that we can learn so much from them.
Climate change, it gives us a chance to reimagine the world in a way that every single human being can participate in. And so whether you're in a remote part of the United States or some other country, when you learn about climate change, it shouldn't just be the science, it should be the opportunity. And the second part of Earth Day's big campaign globally is that it's got to be about jobs. So we have over 235 million union members signed on to our global petitions for climate education. We have 65 million teachers signed on. We have governments left and right now understanding the connection between their ability to participate in the green economy and educating their population now. Not just because they want them to know the science of climate change. It's not that hard. You know, you basically built an incredible umbrella around the planet when you burn fossil fuels, and it's making the place really hot. And so that's the science, but the opportunity is really important. So we believe that climate education should be in every class, from art to gym class to whatever. And we're not alone.
The one big mystery that I had tackled in a previous book, Soul of an Octopus, was the mystery of consciousness. The other big, hard problem in philosophy is time. And I felt, you know, who better than to lead me in this exploration than turtles, who live in some cases for centuries, who've been around. They arose with the dinosaurs, yet they survived the asteroid impact. They are the embodiment of patience and wisdom. But then the pandemic came, and time stopped for most of the world. But not for us, because now we are on turtle time.
Looking at my daughter, I just want her to appreciate the natural world. We have all these impacts happening, and there's a lot of negative storytelling, but just going out and experiencing nature, it is still magical. And that inspires so much action simply by going and experiencing nature. And I think there's so much that we can do. It's about being optimistic now, not negative. We really need to focus on creating excitement around some of these solutions. And for me, there's no reason why the future can't be bright. You know, we can focus on these areas where we can save. We can then be ingenious how we approach it. And we can, within her lifetime, see that recovery, real bouncing back from these major impacts that are happening. So I try to keep this optimistic look of let's really start thinking about the solutions and let's really look at the oceans for those solutions.
Cities are really the living labs of everything that we're doing in terms of energy policy. It's extremely important that whatever we are putting forward in terms of policy, in terms of legislation, if it is not embraced by citizens in cities, in the local level, the best policies will not serve any purpose if they're not really taken up by the citizens.
We have to solve three problems. We have to create a low-waste society through incentives to change individual behavior from consumer to user, through loss and waste prevention, intelligent resource management. We also have to create a low-carbon society by preserving the water, electricity, CO2 emissions embodied in physical assets, or through innovation in green electricity and circular energy. And the third challenge, which is probably the biggest, we have to create a low anthropogenic mass society by preserving these existing stocks of infrastructure, buildings, equipment, vehicles, and objects. The only strategy I know that can fulfill these three challenges is a circular industrial economy.
don't sit comfortably on values that we consider are taken for granted. Go out and speak out for them and nurture them actively. Nurture the values of peace, of the values of democracy, of mutual understanding, of tolerance, of sustainability. Speak out, speak out. You have means that even my generation did not have. You have means, the social media, it's incredible how it can be mobilized so easily. So make the best of the means that you have at your reach.
I like the idea that the world has agreed on something that we don't agree on very much. If I had to choose one, it is SDG number 4. SDG 4 is that all kids should be in school, that everybody should get an education. If we're just badly educated, we're not going to make it on this planet. Let's empower young people so that they know the future. They know the world that they're going to be leading soon. They can do something about it. In fact, specifically target 4.7, which says that everybody should learn about sustainable development. Everybody should learn about global citizenship. Everybody should learn tolerance for other people's cultures.
The Creative Process and One Planet podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation. This podcast is produced by Mia Funk with the participation of collaborating universities and students. Max Richter's music featured in this episode was On the Nature of Daylight from the Blue Notebooks and Path 19, Yet Frailest from Sleep. Music is courtesy of Max Richter, Universal Music Enterprises, and Mute Song. We hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. If you'd like to get involved with our creative community, exhibitions, podcasts, or submit your creative works for review, just drop us a line at team@creativeprocess.info. Thanks for listening.